You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Wake up, KBOO listeners. It's time to support local community-based media this fall by donating and becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give. When you contribute now until September 21st, your donations will be matched dollar for dollar, up to $11,000, thanks to listeners like you. Double the impact and double the fun.
KBOO Community Radio's annual meeting and board election will be held on Saturday, September 21st at 1 p.m. at the Show Bar in Southeast Portland. At the annual meeting, members will have an opportunity to meet candidates running in the board election, and final votes will be cast and counted. The results of the election will be announced at the end of the meeting. Online voting is open now through the annual meeting at kboo.fm/board24. Paper ballots may also be requested. Again, that's KBOO's annual meeting and board election on September 21st at 1 p.m. at the Show Bar, 1300 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm/board24.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Good evening, you're listening to Prison Pipeline here on KBOO Community Radio. Tonight we're talking with composer and cellist Anna Fritz and actor Paul Soucy about their production of An Iliad. Paul and Anna, welcome to Prison Pipeline.
Well, it's so good to be here, Emma. Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you. So you recently performed An Iliad at Coffee Creek, and you're also going to be doing a fundraiser for a tour of prisons this fall. So I would love to just kind of jump right into it. I'd like to let our listeners know, what is An Iliad, and what do you do? Let's start with, what do you do?
Paul, do you want to go first?
Sure. An Iliad is a script that was written by Dennis O'Hare and Lisa Peterson in 2008-2009, and it is an adaptation of Homer's Iliad. And back in 2018 and 2019, myself and Anna Fritz toured to a grand total of over 30 prisons and schools and community centers and places of worship, producing this play, performing this play, primarily for adults in custody, audiences that were at that time incarcerated. Our goal initially was simply to just tour a play to prisons, but as we engaged in that initial production and that initial tour, we were discovering that the biggest tool of this, the biggest benefit of this performance is its ability to knit together different audiences across prison walls, discussing our shared cycles of trauma and violence and hopefulness and redemption. That's basically what we're still doing to this day.
Yeah, the play itself is there are two of us on stage, or whatever we use as a stage wherever we are. And Paul is the poet, and I am the muses, and I'm playing the cello and singing while he's telling this incredible story. That experience of doing this performance inside the prisons, and then doing public performances outside, I think none of us really expected how this would create this thread of connection between the audiences. And we had a lot of experiences of folks who had family or friends inside would come to the performances outside and say, oh, you know, my loved one who's inside just saw you last week and told us we had to come. And that kind of the knitting together that Paul was referring to is something that I think we didn't realize at the outset of this, the power that would have.
So tell me about the germination of this idea. Where did you get the idea to do this?
Our director, Patrick Walsh, he had been volunteering in prisons for several years prior to our production, directing performances at Two Rivers Correctional Institution and in other facilities, Columbia River Correctional Institution as well. And he initially envisaged this project as a kind of thank you offering to these guys who had devoted months of their lives rehearsing plays, then to perform it only once or twice for an invited audience, where audiences from the outside would have to go through all the processes of getting background checked and, you know, putting your ID in at the desk at the front of the prison, and in some cases traveling across the state to be able to see the show. So Patrick was initially trying to put together a project that expressed his gratitude to these performers, these artists, who had, you know, gone through the work of trying to put together something excellent for him. He wanted to put together something excellent for them. And so it was initially seen as this low impact project, a cast of only one performer. It grew to two performers with this particular project. We like to say that it was an easy sell to the administrations of these prisons, because it's the epitome of dead white guy culture, ancient Greek text that's been adapted in modern language. And then bringing it to these different prisons was his brainchild, that, like, this is the first project that we're aware of in Oregon that has gone to as many different prisons with the same show within the same time frame. And then bringing that also, as Anna was saying, bringing that also to audiences outside of prison walls, so that family members and loved ones can share in the same or in a similar experience as their loved ones who are incarcerated. But then it grew from that.
Yeah, another feature and very important part of the performances that we do is that there's always a conversation afterwards. So, you know, we bring in this very heavy, powerful piece of art and have this experience with folks. But then we always talk about it afterwards and share about our experience. And doing that both inside and outside has been another, you know, way of deepening that connection, and also of really visibilizing those audiences inside to folks outside.
Why did you choose this particular play? I mean, or why did he choose it? What is it about this play that speaks so well to adults in custody?
Yeah. Aside from the fact that it's so well known in Western culture, Western civ, white culture, primarily white culture, that it gets an easy pass from the powers that be. That aspect of it aside, the Iliad at its core is about this impossible question of how do you confront and see and recognize and then let go of your addiction to rage, your addiction to violence and overwhelming anger, overwhelming emotion. It's a long epic poem, 24 books in ancient Greek, of all kinds of details, very visceral, very vivid details that are somehow strung together with an impossible magic of poetry, the core of poetry, of details and of feelings and of emotions and emotional truth that in many ways, almost for the first time, this poet, Homer, who we call Homer, was able to recognize this connection between unbearable things that you don't know how to keep living once you've committed these unbearable things or had these unbearable things happen to you, and what to do next. How do you carry on beyond those events, beyond those terrible, terrible situations? How do you make a life that is meaningful when you've survived and there's like no real justification for why you've survived and someone else hasn't? This poem really directly sees that. It refuses to obscure that or to turn away from that. It stares at it unflinchingly, and it invites the reader, it invites the audiences across thousands of years to examine that about ourselves and to find within ourselves, how do we keep going? How do we have some kind of meaning after all of these unbearable things keep happening?
Would you like to add anything, Anna?
Yeah, I think, I know for you, Paul, like, you know, you have a longer relationship with this text than I do, just because you've been a scholar of the classics for a lot longer than I have. And it was a little harder sell for me. And I think partly, when our director, Patrick Walsh, approached me to write a score and to be the musician performing in this, it was, I think part of why it was hard for me was getting access to it as a woman, and like the seeing how the voices of women are so erased in a lot of those classic Greek texts. And so it's been a long relationship for me with this work of untangling that and figuring out how we bring those voices in, how we bring women's voices into this production. And that's also part of the conversation that we have afterwards. And there's, everything, Paul, you said about the themes of this work, I mean, there's universal relevance there. But then I feel like we also get into, what are the impacts on the families and women left behind and children. And that's all part of the unpacking that we do, both in the way that we have interpreted this text, because Paul and I have been living with it and working on it together for 6 years now, and have performed it a lot of times, and are still learning about it. And our audiences keep helping us learn about it more as we see how it's reflected back in their lives.
So you recently performed at Coffee Creek. Can you tell me a little bit about that experience?
Yeah, we've actually performed at Coffee Creek, I think, Paul, 4 times. Is that right? We've been on the minimum side twice and on the medium side, and that's where we were just recently. Although our previous times, we're just now getting back into facilities since the pandemic, since that really shut things down for quite a while. It's been so incredible to be back with audiences on the inside, to connect with folks. It has been just really wonderful. And this has been a springing off point for where we're actually planning to do a tour of a whole bunch of facilities coming up this fall. Paul, did you want to say anything specific about the recent performance? Or?
Yeah, a huge part of this for me as a performer, as an actor, is this live experience that is a unique experience every time we do it. It's a unique audience every time. And at Coffee Creek this last May, on the medium side in their chapel, we had audience members who had never seen the show before, and we had audience members who have seen the show multiple times. And so they were braided together in our audience in that one performance. And the energy of those performances, of those unique performances, is really, really powerful. Both Anna and myself are vibing, as the kids say, off of the energy that an audience gives us. And that is bringing everyone's unspoken histories, unspoken stories, unspoken memories, who people are grieving, who people are trying to forgive or trying to be forgiven by. All of that, we as the performers, as the artists, we can feel those things intuitively. And without knowing anybody's details, we are latching onto that. And so it creates a really unique and powerful experience for everybody involved, I think. And then we're able, as Anna was saying in our conversations afterwards, as far as people are willing to, we're able to tease out some of those details and walk through what are some of those insights, what are some of those self-discoveries that people are making in the moment that have been activated by this text and this music. All of it is, the whole of the Iliad is just a touchstone for those discoveries, those insights that people get to have in real time. And that's really the privilege of this work and the power of this work.
Mm-hmm. Now you're performing at some facilities coming up this fall. Where are you going to be performing?
Well, we've been hard at work planning a tour. We're so excited to get to bring this production to folks who are incarcerated in other states. We're going to be performing in Wisconsin at a couple of different facilities, in Vermont, and in Maine. We're going to those three states, and we'll be doing 8 to 10 performances inside. And then in each of those places, we'll be, following this pattern that the work has taught us is so important, of doing public shows on the outside in each of those places as well. And to kick off that whole tour, we actually have a local show in Portland coming up. We're going to give a performance in September on the 26th as part of the Risk Reward Festival, and that'll be downtown at Portland Center Stage's Ellen By Studio Theater, and tickets are available online starting, I think, September 1st. For that. So we would love to have folks come and see us off on this adventure.
That's great. How do you fund something like this? Do you do it through grants, or how do you do it?
It's a trick. It's a real mixture. I mean, we've had a lot of support from different individuals along the way, and yes, some grant funding. I'm a Quaker, and on this tour we've gotten a lot of support from Quaker organizations along the way, who want to support the work that we're doing. And actually, you can see a whole list of who has supported us on it. We just launched a new website, so we definitely invite you to come check that out. It's figtreecommittee.org. We've done this production of an Iliad under a number of different theater companies, and we are now finally launching our own thing that is going to continue this work, and that's the Fig Tree Committee. On that website, you can get on our mailing list to keep up to date on what we're doing, and event calendar, make a donation if you want to support the work. And then also, as I said, there's a list of who our funders have been.
So Anna, you also work with the choir at Fluffy Creek, don't you?
I have some, yeah. Yeah, I am connected to the director of the choir at Coffee Creek on the minimum side. Sarah Allen is a colleague and friend of mine. And actually, back when we were first touring in Iliad, she brought some of my songs. I'm also a singer-songwriter, folk singer, cellist. In my other identity. And she brought some of my songs to the choir there. And I guess folks in the choir really connected with some of those songs and decided to perform them. And so I was able to go and see the choir perform some of my songs. And then that started this. There's one song in particular that they really loved and were ending each of their rehearsals with. And so then when I would go on tour as a solo artist and perform for audiences out in the world and get them singing together, whenever I would teach that song and have people sing it, I would always talk about the choir at Coffee Creek. And so that connection has been really powerful. And then just this year, in February, I got to go in and do a program for the choir of my solo material and to teach them a bunch of songs and to have conversation and to hear some of their stories. And you know, the work that I write as a solo artist is, a lot of it is about social issues, you know, colonization, racism, climate, and also, you know, connection to the land and our spiritual connection to land and to each other. And so it was a lot of very personal conversations about that kind of stuff. And then, they actually just in June did a performance where they did a whole set of my songs as part of their concert that they did in June, and I got to go hear that. So it's been just a really wonderful relationship to get to be developing with the singers at Coffee Creek.
Oh, great. Paul, what motivates you to keep returning to facilities that house adults in custody? Why do you do it?
What a great question. I do this work, fundamentally, I do this work because I'm a person of color. I'm the son of immigrants, of Filipino immigrants here in Portland, Oregon. Fundamentally, according to all of the stereotypes of our inherited received cultures, I'm not supposed to be here. White America has made it very clear in all of the different ways that white, straight, heteronormative America does, that, you know, people who are marginalized aren't supposed to be here. And the Iliad, I came to the Iliad personally as, you know, someone trying to assimilate into white Western culture, and it actually while it helps me to code switch and survive in white Western culture, it also helped me actually, yeah, see some truths about myself and about the world that I live in. And so I am deeply devoted to this lineage of practice, of performance, of inquiry, of poetry, of introspection, and kind of trying and striving to find and to live in the world that we deserve to live in. And that means staring at the truths unflinchingly and connecting to people who are forgotten and left behind, for whatever reason, justly or unjustly. And so, yeah, that's why I do it.
Thank you. Paul, Anna, I just have one last question for you tonight for Prison Pipeline. What does it mean to adults in custody to be exposed to the arts? How do the arts benefit their lives?
Well, I've heard many times, well, one thing that's sticking in my head is somebody who said, we don't get anything this beautiful in here. And that really made me reflect a lot about the importance of beauty and of the connection that and vulnerability and authenticity that we get to have through performance. Yeah, that's the first thing that's coming to mind. I've got more, but Paul, I'm sure you've got one too.
Yeah. I'm going to throw out some phrases that I've probably already used in this time already. Things like emotional honesty and emotional truth. Those core things are things that, regardless of whether we're incarcerated or not, we all have a hard time being emotionally honest and being true to our feelings and true to our own inner experiences. And the practice of culture, whether it's being an artist or being an audience, you get to access that emotional truth. You get to be emotionally honest in ways that in our day-to-day lives or in our incarcerated lives, we're prohibited from expressing that or from feeling that or registering that within ourselves and within each other. So all of these reactions and all of these discussions that we've been having over the years, both with adults in custody and with audiences outside of prisons, it is this really powerful and really beautiful and rare gift where people are being emotionally honest with us and sharing. This work reminded me of who I am. It reminded me of what I've been through in a real way. It reminded me of my father or of my mother or of the people I left behind or of the people who left me behind. And so those are the stories that Anna and I and our stage manager, Lindsay Hoagland, we've been hearing that every time we do this work. And that's the real privilege of this work. And that's what's so rare about this work. Like, you know, I'm an actor in the rest of my life as well. And it's really rare that you get to have those conversations with quote unquote normal audiences, because my cat is making noise. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
But it's so rare that you get to have those discussions in normal, quote unquote, normal audiences, because we've inhibited ourselves from emotional truth and emotional honesty. And with this play in particular, with this tour that we're continuing to do, we are devoted to that. We are devoted to that mission.
Thanks. We've been talking tonight with Paul Soucy, an actor, and Anna Fritz, a composer and cellist, about their production of An Iliad, which they bring to facilities that house adults in custody here in Oregon. Anna, remind us one more time about your upcoming tour and where you're going to be performing.
Yeah, you can learn about it at figtreecommittee.org. That's where to go on the net to find it. We have a show coming up in Portland, in downtown Portland, on Thursday, September 26th at 7 p.m. That's part of the Risk Reward Fall Festival at Portland Center Stage's Ellen Bai Studio Theater. And you can get tickets online for that. And following that, we'll be doing an October tour of prisons and also outside performances of An Iliad in Wisconsin, Vermont, and Maine. And you can watch our calendar online at figtreecommittee.org. To learn more about that as we announce the shows.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us tonight on Prison Pipeline.
Thanks so much, Emma.
Thank you for having us.
Hi, this is Emma. I am a co-host, and I'm also the current president of the board of directors here at KABU. At KABU, we prove every day that people-powered radio has the ability to bring us together across distances and give us hope when we feel despair. Your friends at KABU want to remind you that generosity has the same power. Join thousands of KABU supporters from all around the world, and let's rally together to build stronger communities. If you can, just go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to this number 44321. And thanks so much for your support of KBOO Community Radio.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be
listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.